This week on Countdown to Infinity, we go on the rags to rip journey of Steve Rogers. Set in an albeit romanticised World War II, we see Chris Evans become the only true comic book Boy Scout any of us should really Kal-El about. This is Countdown to Infinity, and this is Captain America, the First Avenger. Hello, and welcome to another week of Countdown to Infinity.
This week it's Captain America, the First Avenger.
You have to say it, it's a very long title, but this is where Marvel started getting it right with the titles.
Yeah, they did. Before we start, I've got a bone to pick with you. Stop making Kal-El jokes.
Mate, I will make Kal-El, Batman, and shitty fucking DC characters. I'll rip on them all week long.
I hate you so much. I will rip that lightsaber off the wall and beat you to death with it.
Oh my god, we're going cross-fandom here. Here we are then. This is it. This is the last standalone movie in Phase 1 before we hit Avengers. And Jesus Christ, honest to God, this is when we knew it was stepping up. This is the real one, boys.
Yeah. It's a pretty monumental moment, really, isn't it? Easily the best live-action Captain America, because we don't want to count those 90s abominations.
Absolutely.
Chris Evans absolutely nails this role.
You know, as the Human Torch. You know what? This is the first time you really see someone who... he'd been in two movie franchises as Human Torch. He came into this role. There was no way any of us believed that Captain America could, you know, shake off the Human Torch, but he did. It was amazing. We're going to kind of follow last week's structure a bit because it worked out quite well and you guys seem to have liked it, so that's what we're going to do. So first things first, let's give you a little bit of a backstory about where we're at, where we're being seen, and go from there. We start at the very beginning with Captain America.
Yep. We start throwing it back to Thor. We start in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the height of World War II. Johann Schmidt.
That we don't know anything about yet.
No, we don't know who he is.
Well, you do if you actually have ever read a single comic in your life.
He makes an assault on Kongsberg, and he stumbles across a box. A box holding a rather cube-like object.
It's a cosmic cube. Oh, it's a Tesseract. There we go.
Beautiful.
I mean, the thing is, I thought this scene was quite reminiscent of Inglourious Basterds.
Yes.
You know where he's trying to find the Jews underneath the floorboards? You saw how vicious Johann Schmidt could be.
Yeah, man.
Like, he does not pull it. This is the beginning of the movie. We're setting up a villain. Like, and one thing I will say, and this is just Western culture, it's really easy to kind of fall into, is you instantly hate a Nazi.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that this had going for it. It could take the time to really explore Johann Schmidt,
yep,
because you already hated him because he was a fucking Nazi.
You already hate him because he's a Nazi, but because of that scene, you automatically hate him for what he's doing to this small town.
Yeah.
That aren't really anything to do with the war. It's just the one cube that...
He needs that because they're standing in the way.
Exactly.
Like the jewel of Odin's throne room, as it were.
What a quote.
Oh, it's a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
It just starts off as you mean to go on. We don't know anything about him being the Red Skull. We don't know anything other than he is an evil Nazi.
Yeah.
And then cut to our little wee boy.
Oh, our little bless him.
Skinny old little Steve Rogers.
Scrawny Steve.
Scrawny Steve Rogers. Out. I don't know why he's from Cockney London. But
it'd be a very different bloody film if Captain America Cockney was London. Cockney.
The Captain America trilogy is probably my favourite in the MCU.
See, this is where Dav's going to whack out his big Berry Tomorrow dick.
No, it's not anything to do with that. Well, it is. We played a venue in Manchester that when you open the back of the venue, opened up onto the street where they were filming this. It was a closed set. So we actually not only got to see some of the this being filmed, but after hours as well, we got to go onto the set, as it were. It's the scene that takes place outside of the antique store where they're turning Steve Rogers into a super soldier. I freaked out when I was on set. We weren't meant to be there. It was so good, but it was one of the best experiences of my life. They turned Manchester into old New York.
Because Manchester looks more like old New York than New York.
And apparently the docks of Liverpool look way more like the docks of New York than New York does.
I think I speak for all the listeners when I say I hate you.
Oh, but straight away it made me love this movie. Like, I was always going to love this movie because I'd been there. Like, going back, what I loved straight away, we're 2011, so we can't even blame, like, you know, it was a long time ago, like we did with Iron Man. But straight up, like, apart from one or two scenes, scrawny Steve Rogers is very well done.
Doesn't look too bad, really.
The only scene where it's really noticeable is actually where he's in the car with Peggy.
Yes, that... And it's more Peggy's eyelines as well. Yeah. Peggy looks higher than Steve.
But, like...
it's not cool.
Like, you get to him, we're there, we start the movie seeing straight away how much Steve Rogers wants to be there and stop bullies. And that's what it's about. You're seeing a scene of him being denied from enlistment. You see a scene of him picking on a bully in a cinema and just never giving up. Like, instantly, truth be told, I was never a massive Captain America fan in the comic books. It wasn't until seeing this movie that I went back and read any straight-up Captain America stuff. He'd always been part of the Avengers. He'd always been part of stuff that I'd read. I liked him as a character in certain parts. I particularly liked him in Civil War, actual first Civil War comic.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I really watched this movie that I was like, there's so much more to him. Like, I always thought
depth to him.
Yeah, I always thought that Captain America was this... You hear the name... And as an English person, you think jingoistic, you think nationalistic, like, like every time someone talks about how good America is in a movie, like all of a sudden an American flag comes up behind them and a bald eagle pulls them up in the air, screaming, a-cock, America's amazing! And it lands you on Mount Rushmore as apple pie appears in front of you.
And that's kind of what you expect Captain America to be, but it's such more than that. In fact, there's very little, you know, propaganda to...
And I didn't. It's the first hero we're seeing that you don't hate. Like, you're never put into conflict. Yeah. The conflict isn't that you need to see him go through a mental transformation. He's already there.
He's already a hero. He just doesn't have the physical skills.
He is a hero because he's already got the mentality of a hero. And that is what makes the beginning of this movie so good. Mm-hmm. Within 15 minutes, 20 minutes of this movie... You already want Steve Rogers to be the best that he could be.
It's also worth noting that he's very much like a blue-collar hero to begin with. Mm-hmm. He's not a billionaire playboy. He's not a god.
He's a dude from Brooklyn.
He's a dude from Brooklyn. And I think that's...
Which they changed slightly, because originally he was from Jack Kirby's Lower East Side.
Yeah.
Like, real dirty New York streets. It works. Like, we then visit the double date scenario with my man, Sebastian Stan.
Bucky.
I didn't realise I loved him as much as I did until the second movie, but...
Yeah.
Jesus Christ,
it took a little while for me to like Bucky.
I didn't
especially with the film, just because... And for me, it is the scene where he saves him. He saves Steve from the bully, and he's got that cocksure attitude, and he's like,
he's a little bit Thor.
He is a little bit Thor.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you like him, you can see they're friends, but it's very much, don't worry, guy, I'll sort it out. You leave this to the big boys kind of thing.
And that's how his attitude is with when they go on the double date. It's very much like, oh, we are going dancing.
Yeah.
Steve's obviously gone to enlist. It's very much Bucky is in control of the situation. He's probably going to shag both those girls later on.
You know that kind of guy. Yeah, he is your classic jarhead.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, go back. Howard Stark and the Stark Expo. We're seeing the first Stark Expo.
Fantastic.
Well, not the first Stark Expo, but we're seeing a Stark Expo with Howard, not Tony now. Yeah, and that's what's really cool, is already tying those things together. Doesn't need... Howard Stark is actually quite a big part of this movie in terms of plot device.
Yeah.
But it's never... Do you know what I mean? It's never rammed down your throat. It's never rammed like... This is Tony Stark's father. This is Tony Stark's father. This is Tony Stark. You know, like that scene from from Austin Powers where you have to tell someone three times before they get it. Like, it very much is, hey, Howard Stark, he's an inventor.
You know, there's never a moment where it's like, oh, I've got this girlfriend called Maria and we're going to have a baby soon. You know what I mean? It's not that on the nose. It's very nuanced. It's very...
I think they found almost, their stride
there is
at this
almost
point.
A parallel. There is a very big parallel between Howard and Tony.
Yeah.
That once you've seen the previous films, you automatically understand. You don't need to be explained. You're like, oh, okay. That's fine. Technology, cool. All right. There's no further explanation needed.
Yeah, you're like, he's an inventor, he's rich, and that's why it was passed on.
Yeah, and I love the scene where he has the floating car, and it's like, ta-da! And then it fucks up and breaks, and he's like, well, I didn't say it was perfect.
Yeah.
And it's just that little...
The good part.
Yeah, it's great, it's great.
I think the other thing that's really good about having Howard Stark in it is that it really shows straight away that he's got to get on with Howard. Mm-hmm. And then he's got to get on with Tony. Mm-hmm. And having a relationship with a father that Tony never had the relationship with is a really beautiful thing. When you get to the end of that movie, I really like that. Now, this movie, I think more than any other movie, stands up to the other MCU. Like, it very much feels like we've got our stride at this point. You know, if you were to take any of the MCU movies from Phase 3, and you were to put them next to Captain America First Avenger, mm-hmm. they work, yeah? Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't think I really like Iron Man 2, but it doesn't.
No.
I really like Thor, but it doesn't. They are standalone movies, yeah?
Yeah.
Whereas I felt like this was how the beginning of how they were going to continue, which was very much, no, we're gonna start leaving these breadcrumbs for you.
Yeah.
Like, quite heavily.
And I think it's quite interesting the fact that it's the only film in the MCU that's majority set in the past,
mm-hmm.
but it's the connective tissue of Phase 1.
Yeah.
It brings in Thor, it brings in Iron Man. To an extent, it kind of brings in Hulk because, obviously, you know, the experiment on the Super Soldier Serum and all that. It brings it all together quite nicely, in a little bow, ready for Avengers. But I just think it's quite an interesting take that it's, you know, for the large part, it's set in the past altogether.
Next up, we get him going again for another medical, and this is where we meet Abraham for the first time.
Yeah, right? Abraham Erskine.
What an amazing character. Like, to say he's not in it a lot, the gravity of his death
is very heavy.
Stunning. Yeah. Like, it's actually stunning.
And it's all because of his relationship with Steve. Mm. Especially the scene where they have a drink. Or rather, Abraham has a drink and Steve isn't allowed
one. But it's before, like, he sees when he's first in there and Steve throws out that line, like, you should always stand up to a bully. Like, it's such a beautiful moment. Like, we've got many big men fighting this war. Maybe it's going to take a small man to win it.
Yeah.
The point where you realise that Steve really is the hero is where the Tommy Lee Jones... General Chester grenade scene, and that, mate, for me, that was that gave me goosebumps, and I don't mean that like that sounds so ridiculous, but it's the first time I felt proper comic booky.
I would argue actually that the scene that tells you he's a hero is the same drink scene. Abraham asks him, do you want to kill Nazis, and he's like, I don't want to kill anybody, I just want to help. And I was like, that says a lot. He doesn't want to hurt everybody, he just wants to defend. And that says more to me than... The jumping on the grenade scene is great, but it's just that little character moment that defines Steve Rogers. And I think
Chris Evans really brought an amazing vulnerability to someone who is so ridiculously hench.
But that's because he's had the 20-plus years of being the little guy, of being the guy that will get picked on, and he still manages to maintain that. He doesn't suddenly become, you know, an Olympian physique and becomes a cocksure jock like Thor. He still has the, like you say, the vulnerability, and that's prevalent, especially with the scenes with Peggy. They are fantastic.
I love those scenes.
They are beautiful.
Right, we're going to break down the characters, but we're going to get up to the point where Steve Rogers actually becomes the hero, as it were. So we get there. The super soldier idea is something that in Marvel Comics has been... It's basically the result of the majority of major empowered villains and heroes. It's all down to people trying to recreate this one moment.
Yeah.
Steve Rogers was the only one that it worked for perfectly.
Yeah, and that's mainly because of Steve Rogers as a character, not because of who he is as, you know, as a hero, as his physical capabilities. It's just because of who he literally is, his personality. And that's beautiful. I think that's such a almost tender part of the MCU that nobody really touches on that much.
Can we talk about the man meat moment? Yeah, because this is the first time in a Marvel movie where they realised that women were looking at these men like men have been looking at women for a million years. And the scene where the super soldier thing comes open and he's lit from the back and he's glistening. And like and
Peggy just like Peggy just taps him.
Little touch. It's like touch every single person in that cinema was like either wanted to be Steve Rogers or touch Steve Rogers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was
or both.
Yeah, or both. I wanted to be Steve Rogers and touch myself repeatedly. I'm like, I'm sat there sobbing in the cinema into my popcorn, like I will never be as beautiful as you, Steve. It felt right for his character because of everything
that got to that point.
Now, let's talk about Steve Rogers as a whole, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Everything from him being propaganda to him wanting to be more.
God, that costume.
Right.
Oh, dear
What
Lord.
Did you love about Steve Rogers that we haven't already discussed?
His actual costume.
Mm.
Now, for me, I used to subscribe to Empire magazine, and when Captain America First Avenger was coming out, they did a subscriber's cover, and they had the American flag in the background, and Steve Rogers front and center, and it was the first time we got to see his costume, and I was like, this is fantastic. It's a practical version of a superhero outfit.
Tactical even.
Hey, I like that. That doesn't look, you know, too ham-fisted. Thor was very much flowing cape and armor, and Iron Man was very much sci-fi. The Captain America outfit looked like something you could believe was made for the army.
Yeah.
Instantly, I was like, yep, I'm on board. I even liked the fact that he has a holster just for his gun. It's just a small detail, but it's something that you don't really think about. He's a soldier. Of course he'd have a gun and not just wander into a battlefield with one shield.
Mm. I love that too. I love the fact that they definitely based it on like almost like SAS, Black Ops style thing. Another thing I love going throughout is that he is constantly trying to push himself, constantly trying to be better. Like, he gets into the propaganda role, not because he's in it for the fame, kind of a la Thor, but in it because he actually sees himself helping.
Yeah,
and it's
one way he can do that.
Basically, I loved him in this movie that they service so much comic book. Now, they'd done that in the other movies to a certain degree, but in this, we are literally talking
from covers.
Front covers. They're taking bits from the comics that we love and they are legitimately visualizing them on the screen. Mm-hmm. The fact that we went through a variation of shields, like we had the car door with the star on it that then became the propaganda shield from Captain America number one, and they even bring up Captain America number one to be signed. It almost makes it, oh my God, was Captain America... Do you know what I mean? It makes you think...
It's almost like that kind of nice little homage when he does, literally punch Hitler.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's great. When he's in the prisoner of war camp in Germany, they say, oh, well, what are you going to do? He's like, well, I've punched Adolf Hitler over 200 times.
Yeah, it's great.
Fantastic.
I also love the fact that they're like, you're quite attached to this, we've updated it, and that's when you get the big unveil of the iconic shield.
Yeah, the vibranium shield.
Again, I always thought the shield was lame, and it's controversial, but I always thought Captain America's shield is lame, because I'd never really read a lot of Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
This was a movie that made me go, I want a shield. Do you know what I mean? I don't even need a shield, but I want a shield. Like, and that, I love that he used it continuously. Yeah. It wasn't just an accessory. Like, it is his weapon. And the reason why it's his weapon is because he doesn't want to kill anyone. That's why it sums up.
See, that's why I loved Captain America in the first place as a kid, was that he didn't have a gun, didn't have a sword. It was a shield.
Mm.
He was a defense mechanism. He used it as a weapon as well, but it was defense.
Yeah. It was almost like a deterrent rather than a lethal deterrent.
Or a giant frisbee.
for Hulk. When he gets out to Europe, I guess the SSO show, the turn there, instantly you know that he's been pushed into it. Mm. Like, he's been manipulated by Peggy. Like, absolutely. Yeah. And it's great. She is perfect because she is a badass from the off. She almost is like, I don't have rippling muscles, but I could kick your ass, you know, and that
in heels.
Yeah. And that's that scene where like Abraham's just been shot.
Yep.
And he goes out into the street. Who's the person that chases...
Peggy. She runs out straight to the middle of the street. No fucks given about traffic and just starts firing at that car. That says everything you need to know about Peggy.
And she's about to get run over. Yeah. And she's pissed off that Steve Rogers takes her takes her out the way.
Yeah, Hayley Atwell, man.
She was so good. She spawned her own fucking series.
Because that series... You've seen it all?
Not all of it.
Oh, dude, it's great. It is great. They introduced Jarvis. Proper Jarvis. Nice. Butler Jarvis. And she is such a well-written character in the film. Mm. Like we said earlier, she's a hero in her own right. She's a soldier in her own right. Not just, you know, the pretty love interest.
I thought the love interest part was almost organic.
Yeah, it didn't feel...
And the part where it was really organic is where Natalie Dormer...
Yeah, Natalie Dormer from Game of Thrones. Yeah. Marjorie Tyrell.
Kisses Steve Rogers and she loses it. And he's like, it's bulletproof.
And it's not blanks either. She's fully just blows a clip into
him. She is a badass. You would not want to... And I...
You would not want to fuck her over.
No, you would not. Jesus Christ. And I think that had Steve Rogers never come about, she will be one of the... Like, she would have been one of the most talked about... They led you believe that she was like...
She'd have been like Amelia Earhart level of iconic.
Yeah, levels. Absolutely. You'd be reading books about, you know, her in World War II.
Yeah. But the thing that got me was the fact that she could do everything that Steve Rogers could, to a certain extent, in heels, with her lippy on, and her hair done, and just killing it. Do you know what I mean? Like, she is a well-deserved addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the extension... My only gripe with Agent Carter is that Agent Carter should have been a movie.
Yeah.
Like they should have spanned... Because, like myself... Like, I read the comics, I follow the movies, I can't do everything. You know, I've got so many things to catch up on that I can't watch everything. I'm only just catching up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
But that is something that she should have had her own movie. Mm.
That would have been a great way of spinning out into a Black Widow movie.
Exactly.
And just saying. But now that is confirmed, so it's all fine.
Getting on to, like, stuff that I didn't really like. And actually... With Steve Rogers, there isn't anything to a certain degree.
With Steve Rogers, perfect.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Something I didn't like was it was the first time we'd seen mass death that nobody really cared about.
Yeah.
Like, I know that we were killing Hydra people, but we were using technology that was legitimately vaporizing people.
And this is my biggest problem with the film. So when that first trailer came out and you see Cap in all his full glory, running around, fighting in the war, fantastic. And that's what I expected. I expected a war movie that happened to have Captain America in it. I didn't want a science fiction movie.
Yeah.
When they introduced the Tesseract, I don't have a problem with that, because they are setting up the wider MCU and that's fine. But it's when they give the Tesseract to Arnim Zola and he begins making all these space-age weapons that fire blasts of energy all over the place. It really annoys me.
You see, I kind of accepted that to a certain degree. It's like, in history, we know that, you know, Hitler and the Nazi armies had these occult sectors of the Nazi army. He was obsessed with it.
And that's why Hydra works.
Yeah, so that's why Hydra works. What I didn't think was given enough leverage was the fact that we were at war. Like, I didn't feel like we were at war when we were in Europe, like there. Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't Saving Private Ryan.
That's what it should have
been. You know, like, when you watch Rogue One?
Yeah.
You're at war.
You are at war. You're at war. You feel the desperation of those characters.
I guess that level of grit wouldn't have worked with Captain America. It's a minor thing for me, but it is... I didn't ever feel like... I felt like we were in a time period. But I never felt like we were... Well, I felt like we were in America during World War II.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I felt. Zola, the reason why I love Zola is because he is straight out the comics. And without making him the crazy Kirby design that they did, they not only go back to in this movie where he's got like the mirror up to his face, but they also, when he becomes the computer screen...
That was a really intelligent way of updating...
Yeah, I thought it was the only way they could do it. Hugo Weaving as Red Skull, very classily done. Like, it would have been very easy to kind of like ham that up. But
and it was to an extent, but not so much that you got bored of it.
When the big reveal of the Red Skull, the actual Red Skull, you weren't sat there going, why does he look like that? It made sense. He tried to, again, we're going back to, he tried to use the super serum on himself, and it just ruined him.
Yeah, obviously it does play up to the villain-hero trope. But because they look so different, and tonally they're so different, it works. And I just love it.
Do you like him as a villain, though?
I do like him as a villain, but I love it when he gets punched and the mask just slips.
Yeah.
Slips underneath his eye, and you can see that small bit of red, and you're like, hang on.
I love that.
It's great. And then he rips it off. And
I think the poignant part for me with the villain, because what you, like in Thor with Loki, you definitely had a sense of, I can understand where Loki's coming from, yeah?
Yeah.
You can't understand where the Red Skull's coming from. However, the point in which he's like, Hitler's plans, they are too small for me, I have bigger things. At that point, you realise how far gone he is. And it almost is, you almost want him to succeed in a certain way, because now you've got a villain that will wipe out Hitler in a stroke, will wipe out the Donald Trumps in a stroke. You know, someone who literally can go, done with you. That, as a villain, Doctor Doom. The reason why Doctor Doom is one of the greatest Marvel villains, and this is why the Fantastic Four movies failed, because they never got this, is Doctor Doom is beyond the human race. Beyond the human race. He isn't a god, but he might as well be. Mm-hmm. The Red Skull, we saw a transformation from someone who was a Nazi officer that was trying to rise up, tried to become a super soldier, and became more. It's not a world-ending... we're in World War II, so it kind of is world-ending, but it's not a world-ending plan. But it is. He's like, I'm thinking about the solar system. I'm not thinking about... for one man on Earth to do that, that was amazing.
I think he does kind of want to destroy the world, but he wants to remake it as well.
Yeah.
I think that's not the beauty of the Red Skull, but why that character works. Because, yeah, he wants to wipe out New York and Berlin and everywhere else, but it's because he wants to reshape it into something a bit bigger. He has aspirations to be a god, essentially.
I just think it
on
keeps...
the level of Odin.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean? That's his aspirations.
And it keeps on coming back to... I always draw the comparison between this and Inglourious Basterds, because it really is that kind of... So maniacal, he's almost likable. Red Skull...
It's the draw. It's the draw of the villain.
The Red Skull in this definitely drove you to go, what if the Red Skull won here? And even though you've got this instantly likable character in Steve Rogers...
Did Dav just advocate for Nazism?
No. I advocated for Hydra. Hail Hydra!
fuck's sake.
Things that you really didn't like about this movie, we've kind of touched on, but is there anything else that you wanted to kind of squeeze in there?
I don't like the ending.
Okay.
I don't like the plane. It just feels really derivative that it's like, oh, we're in a plane, I'm going to crash it. Now, are you telling me there weren't any parachutes? Was there no way of jamming the system so that you could jump out and it would crash and you'd be fine? Mm. I don't fully believe that. I think that Peggy and Steve had already established a relationship and he would have done something to make sure of getting out. I know it's a great... a moment of self-sacrifice.
It was needed in order to make sure that the relationship... It's the star-crossed lovers thing.
Yeah.
It had to be, because it's what drives Steve Rogers in present-day times.
But there
is a man out of time. Like, he had to be torn away before this romance had even blossomed.
Yeah.
He wasn't entitled to happiness, and he was still doing the right thing. That is such an amazing kind of like...
I get it, but just like in practical terms, I feel like he'd have bailed out. I feel like he'd have just gone, there's a hole right there, parachute, see ya. Even if he'd landed in the water and then frozen, fair enough. But I don't believe he'd just sit there and take it, you know what I mean?
That's cool. The only thing I really didn't like about this movie, the fact that we didn't revisit the Red Skull.
Yeah, the fact that... well, for now...
Like,
I still hold hope that he'll come back. I kind of hope... I know we saw his skeleton, but this is comic books. Mm. You know what I mean? If Loki can come back from Dark World,
yeah,
then Red Skull can come back from First Avenger.
I really liked his character, and I really liked Steve Rogers' interaction with him, mm-hmm. and they're a great play off each other. Stan Lee. Let's talk Stan Lee.
I love Stan Lee's cameo in this. It's great. It's just so basic, but it works.
Yeah.
So there is an event for Steve Rogers. He's about to be awarded a medal. They call his name, and a different bloke comes out in a grey suit and whispers in the announcer's ear, and it cuts to Stan Lee, and he's like, oh, he's smaller than I'd imagine. Brilliant.
It's great. As always, we love Stan Lee.
Stan Lee is bae.
But ratings. Now, I'm going to go first with this one. And I've had to... And I've done the thing that we said in number one that I shouldn't do, yeah, is that I've rated this based on everything I know now and also the fact that I know that I have to give some extremely high marks
later on
in the line. So when I first came out of the cinema and maybe up until the end of phase two,
uh-huh.
maybe up until Captain America Winter Soldier,
uh-huh. okay.
this would have got a 9.
Oh, okay.
Straight up, right? Okay. Like, and to say I wasn't invested fully in Captain America,
yeah,
that's a big indictment. Yeah, for me. So I'm gonna give it an 8.5 because okay. I do think it's better than Iron Man and yeah. Iron Man 2.
Yeah,
by a country mile. But I know I've got Doctor Strange coming up. I know I've got Civil War. I know I've got Homecoming. I know I've got Winter Soldier. And I know that I've got Avengers.
Oh,
so for me right now, I have to stick with an 8.5.
Okay. Now, I was already invested in Captain America before I stepped into the cinema. And I feel like that's my downfall. I expected a little bit too much. I had the whole grounded, you know, war movie idea in my head. And it was, but it wasn't when the Tesseract was introduced, and that really pulled it down for me. There are bits in this movie I really enjoyed, but once it starts to get sci-fi, and once they introduced CCTV in 1944, it really pissed me off. I'm going to have to go with a 7.
You're scoring it lower than your Iron Man score.
I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Ooh.
But considering I thought we were getting this... Inglorious Bastards of a movie, of a comic book movie, but we got Independence Day with the giant ship. No, don't get me wrong, it is a great film. I enjoyed it. It didn't reach the heights I wanted it to. And, you know, I'm thinking of the ratings that I'm going to give in absolutely. A few weeks' time. Homecoming. I'm going to have to stick with a 7.
Cool, I can't influence that. If you're wondering why we didn't really talk a lot about Bucky Barnes in this edition,
it's
probably because he has an entire movie dedicated to him coming up in Phase 2. So... That's, you know, again, like with Loki last time, we got to save a little bit because you want to know more about these characters and we want to give each character time to explore. Mm. So that has been the first Avenger. Next time, we're going to be discussing the Avengers, the end of Phase 1. We're going to try and make the staple points, what we feel are like really important moments. We're going to make them a bit bigger, maybe up to an hour long. So please join us and let us know anything. I've been David. You can hit me up at SwearboxDJ on Twitter.
I've been Eamon. You can tweet me at Eamon Jacobs. Or you can tweet us both at Heroes Direct. You could even drop us an email at writers@heroes.direct.
And as always, follow these with us, watch them, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.